We're back in on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Sat T.R. Shaw. We're in the Kintec studio. Lots still to get to. Canucks are in Nashville for a couple of days. Apparently, outside of Bridgestone Arena, they've got a Canucks car.
Oh, yeah. They do this.
For the demolition.
It's Smashville for a reason, Dan.
Yeah. I know.
But, like, you know, they're using, what is it, some beat-up old car?
Yeah.
You know?
Like the old pizza delivery driver car?
Yeah.
The pizza delivery guys, like, back in the day. Now they drive Teslas. Like,
Everyone drives Teslas.
Everybody delivering food now is either driving an electric car, mainly a Tesla, or like a scooter.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess if your line of work is delivering, then you have some nice tax write-offs and benefits getting an electric vehicle, I suppose, right? So you can, you know, afford it a lot better. But yeah, there's a lot of Teslas delivering food nowadays.
But like back in the day, you ordered a pizza from Domino's or something, you can guarantee that guy's probably driving like a 92 Tercel.
Yeah, something like that, 100%. The smallest car possible, like a beat-up Volkswagen Beetle or like a Golf, even, like an old Golf.
Yeah, an old Toyota Corolla. As my dad would call it, the Cariola, which is just a wheelbarrow. Anyways. All right, it's a Wednesday. Let's get to Overrated, Underrated. Overrated, underrated, perfectly rated. Which one is it? It's a Wednesday here on Canuck Central. Producer Josh Elliott Wolf. The one-armed Josh Elliott Wolf.
You know it. Hello.
How you feeling?
You know what? I'm feeling good.
Do you? Yeah.
Good days and bad days.
Yeah.
It's a mental grind. I'm not going to lie. It's fine.
All right. So overrated, underrated, perfectly rated. You give us the topics and then we discuss. What do we have first?
We will start with this one from Jabo. Shot attempts, overrated or underrated? Is it a stat that really holds a lot of value?
Generally, yes. I mean, we talk about shot attempts. Corsi, obviously, is what got the conversation started so many years ago to really begin the analytics discussion in hockey. But really, like, shots have always been, I think, a baseline statistic to be able to judge how the run of play has gone, how game flow has gone. But yeah, last night, I mean, 84 shot attempts tells you that the Canucks were doing some things well, but then you need context to decide how well they were doing them.
Yeah, I think shots without context is overrated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think raw shot totals, if you point to it, can be overrated. To me, quality matters more than shots. In the context of the game last night against Nashville, where the shot attempts were, what, 80, mm-hmm. 84, 20, or 36, whatever they were, that's a pretty big indicator of the Canucks were far the better or more dominant team in terms of possession and getting shots at least directed towards goal.
Yes.
Only got 18 of them on goal. But I do think it can be somewhat overrated, especially with how teams are trying to generate quality chances as opposed to going for volume nowadays, at least the good teams. So it's not an easy answer.
Well, I think it's fair to say it's overrated now, but there was a long time where Corsi or shot attempts, because we just didn't have a lot of other data, especially available publicly, where shot attempts on ice, shot attempts were essentially at 5-on-5 the best predictor for future success.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer the case, right? So, yeah, just going based solely off shot attempts would be overrated, yes.
Next one from Woodrow. The Canucks winning this round without Thatcher Demko. Overrated or underrated?
Still underrated for me. If anything, last night, okay, yes, maybe if you want to be extra basic about it, goalie gives up 3 goals on 15 shots. Bad night for goalie. Sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the context of the goals outside of the first one, Philip Forsberg going in on any goalie, like, you're going to give Philip Forsberg the better hand in pretty much all of those situations. And the third goal is a rebound. You're hoping that your player you know, is able to either box out or clear the puck to the corner rather than put it in his own net. So, you know, there's a lot that you could say about Casey DeSmith last night. I don't think it's fair to say he's the reason, and I don't think it's fair to put the series on him either. The Canucks are very much still the better team, so they can win this round without Thatcher Demko. Underrated thought.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I do think though Casey DeSmith, it's not so much the goals either. There are times he doesn't instill confidence with his movement in the crease and his rebound control.
Yeah, he's a little bit chaotic.
So I can understand why when you watch him, you don't feel confident necessarily.
Well, Demko is just so efficient with his movements, right? So when you contrast Demko and Casey DeSmith, they're very different goalies.
Yeah, but it's also one's a great goalie, one's a backup.
Yes.
I think it shows, you know what I mean? I think generally speaking, he's more of a backup type than a starter type, and those guys are going to have flaws in their game.
That'll be interesting as the series goes on, is what does Nashville start to hone in on that they can really find a weakness in Casey DeSmith.
Chef Swagger, panicking when the series is tied 1-1. Overrated or underrated?
I mean, we all know it's overrated, but it's very normal for pretty much every single fan base on the planet.
Yeah, it's nothing new. This always happens. And when you lose a game in the playoffs, people get squirmy. They get a bit scared about things. Like, even when if the Canucks were up 2-0, they lost game 3, you'd be like, oh, now it's 2-1, should have been up 3-0, and you blew that chance. What if they win game 4? Anytime you lose a game in the playoffs, you're going to be a concern. And as a fan who's, you know, living and dying by every game, you're going to be scared when the team loses.
Yes.
Because you see, like, your mortality flash before your very eyes. Like, we can lose? We might lose this series? That's not a fun thought.
It's the complete opposite after game 1. Like, yeah, they're going 16-0. Like, yeah. No, they're not.
They're not.
Yes. Ebbs and flows happen in a series.
Yeah, and it was a missed opportunity last night with how they, you know, overall played the game and the chance to go up 2-0. Absolutely, there was, right? But anytime you win the first game, if you don't win the second game, or anytime you have a chance to go up 2 games on a team in the series, it's a missed opportunity.
Yes.
And you are going to miss opportunities over the course of a long playoff run. If you are lucky to go on a long playoff run, it all comes to your response. It all comes back to how you respond. You know, and that's why, you know, I'm not getting too high and too low in terms of my level of concern with the team. But it just kind of shows you these 2 games in Nashville. You know, the biggest thing here is you can't come away losing both.
Yeah.
The best thing to do, go in there, win game 3, put yourself in the driver's seat again, and you're back in control.
And just win the next 3, and then you don't even have to fly back to Nashville for game 6. That sounds like the best option.
That would be perfect.
Probably. Paulie, block shots and how they could be the deciding factor, overrated or underrated?
Oh, sometimes I do believe block shots can be overrated. Because just in the whole, like, blue-collar mentality that we love.
Yeah, no, it's situational. To me, it's kind of like talking about the shots. Situationally, if you have a big shot block, it can be huge.
Yes.
If you lay out and your goalie's out of position, you get the puck, that's massive.
Yes.
You know, like, shot blocks can help you. If you're blocking a lot of shots and not getting a lot of shots yourself... Mm-hmm. Then it's somewhat overrated because you're under siege a lot and you have to block a lot of shots, right?
It's the old, why does Chris Tanev get hurt every year? It's because the Canucks stink. He's got to block too many shots.
Yeah.
Same goes for Alex Edler all those years. But yeah, you know, it goes back to shot attempts. If you're withstanding a lot of shot attempts, generally it means you're not controlling the run of play. You're having to block more shots. I also think sometimes you can block a shot and take yourself out of position, and that gives, you know, your opponent a chance to attack.
Yeah,
which cannot always be the best thing. But you know, generally, if you're blocking shots in desperation, the way that Nashville found ways to, then you're going to be just like, yeah, it's not an underrated thing to give your team a chance to defend well.
Next one comes from Casual Creations. Quinn Hughes in the playoffs. Overrated or underrated?
Quinn Hughes in the playoffs? What are we saying? He's overrated?
I mean, it's been 2 games, right? I thought he was good in game 1. I thought he had good moments in game 2, but he also had moments in game 2 where he wasn't great. You know, somebody was contesting and being like, well, you keep talking about him falling down on the first goal side. He had a run. Well, it's like, sure, maybe hit a rut, but he also fell down a couple times, and there was a lot of misconnects with his passing. On the power play especially, there was a few times on their breakouts or on their zone entries where he threw the puck blindly and went to nobody. They had to go back and get it and come back up. He turned the puck over a couple times, and I can't believe I'm saying this. He had some moments where he overhandled the puck.
Yes.
And Quinn Hughes, like, never overhand. You can't overhandle the puck if you're Quinn Hughes. He had some moments where he was almost too intent on doing something himself, where he overhandled it slightly and then ends up not making a clean pass. And a couple times where he's pretty adept at picking passes that aren't great. Like, he can pick grenades. He wasn't doing that as well last night. There's a couple of DDD passes from Hronek, which weren't perfectly on the tape, but they kind of exploded on a stick. His level is so high. He was still, like, still good, right? But I do kind of agree with the idea that we haven't seen the best of Quinn Hughes yet in these first two games, especially not last night.
We haven't seen the best of Quinn Hughes yet. He did have the two assists in game one, but we just know Quinn Hughes can be better.
Yeah, I mean, in game one, he had a couple moments where there was that shift where O'Reilly stole the puck from him going behind the net and set up a grade A opportunity. So he's had some moments even in game one, but he can be better.
The only thing, like, 19 playoff games for Quinn Hughes, if you include the bubble year, and he's got 18 points in them. So as far as point producing in playoff games for his career, fine so far, definitely. But we can still see a better version of Quinn Hughes going forward in this series.
Next one from Keyshawn. The lotto line, overrated or underrated?
Feels overrated right now.
Yeah,
I know it's a very small sample, but every time they're out there, you know, it's like offensive zone face-off. They just don't seem to be able to do much. The power play has involved all of those players for a long time now, and it hasn't been going well. So it just feels like, I think when we talk about the lotto line, we are living very much in the past of what it was when it first was put together.
Well, I think when it was first put together, as much as JT took a lot of face-offs and there was some alternating between center duties, JT was often the F1. He was skating and forechecking like a demon a lot, getting in on pucks, getting possession, cycling the puck around. When he's playing now, his center responsibilities are more, especially because he's viewed more as a center now, too, and also how his game has developed since he got here to Vancouver, as opposed to being more straight ahead in his first year and just kind of being content playing off of guys, as opposed to him being the major driver, right, in which we've seen his game really develop. I mean, JT's really transformed since he came to Vancouver, too. Like, he was really good his first year, but really different in how he played as well and where he's, you know, spent most of his time in the offensive zone. So I'm not sure JT's the same player.
Yeah.
And if he's going to still be down the middle more now, I just don't think that chemistry is the same. I know people are still blinded by how well they played on that run through the East, and they had that prolific run and how they didn't lose with a lot of line intact for those games and everything. But ever since, and we've seen them, it hasn't been great shakes. And even the last couple of games before they split them up, they scored on the power play, but 5-on-5, they weren't really generating it.
Yeah. They had a moment last night. Actually, it wasn't the lotto line technically, but it was because it was a face-off in the right dot of the Predators' zone. So they brought out Lindholm to take the draw, and he was with Pettersson and Miller. Lindholm takes the draw, and I noticed Pettersson off the draw. It's a clean win for Nashville, and Pettersson backs off as if he's F3 and he's playing center. And then it takes him a beat to realize, like, oh no, I got to be the one that pushes here, because Lindholm started to back up, and it's just it's affording Nashville so much time to get a breakout. So, you know, as much as yes, they're professional players and they should understand their duties on the ice, when you're going from, hey, I'm usually the F3, I'm used to playing this spot on the ice, you know, sometimes like that, those moments of hesitation are not great in a National Hockey League game.
Well, and when you're feeling fully comfortable, you're just going off instinct and reacting and taking what you see, and you're playing far more on the front foot. If you have to think a beat,
yeah,
you know, you're kind of behind the play.
And that's part of the issue here with Pettersson is, so you've got the Miller line, which has performed fine.
Yeah.
You've got the Lindholm line with Joshua and Garland. Now they've performed pretty well. And Pettersson's kind of now in this awkward spot. He's almost viewed at, like, if you were to rate the lines, you would probably rate it the third line, because the quality of his wingers aren't as good as the quality of wingers with Miller and Lindholm. Mm-hmm. And what Rick Tocchet has done is try to move Pettersson around the lineup to get him into better spots and get him with better wingers. But is it always the best option? It would be a much more preferred option if you just had Pettersson and a couple of wingers that you really trust with him, so you didn't have to move him around the lineup, play him at left wing sometimes, do these different types of things.
Yeah. Can I throw a quick overrated, underrated in here?
Yeah.
Before you get to him, I'm just going to make a decision. It just kind of fits in. Overrated, underrated, Nils Höglander in the playoffs. Like, I haven't noticed him. Two games. He got benched in the second
game.
It's
his first two playoff games.
I'm fair. But I'm saying we haven't talked about it a lot because it's been a lot of focus on Pettersson. We spoke about Hughes a little bit, right? He hasn't been at his best. Höglander is like invisible half the time. I thought in game one, at least he was involved in the forecheck. He wasn't connecting play, but he was battling hard. We talked about his struggles getting on the forecheck, connecting play. I didn't notice him do anything last night.
No, he hasn't even been that guy that gets under the... I guess he got into it with Lauzon a little bit last night.
Yeah, by the net front.
Yeah, and that was just in the first period. After that, he was just like...
One thing I'm noticing, because the thing about Höglander's game, and you're right, he's still young, but this also goes back to, like, you need somebody up higher in a lineup. And if the Höglander's going and playing at a high level, okay, now you have him and Pettersson, they can go. Now it's just like... You know, somebody texted into and asked the question, do you really need to have Lindholm on his own line against Nashville? Do you maybe think about putting Lindholm with Pettersson now? Like, if Höglander doesn't get going, as much as Pettersson needs to get going, but if Höglander's not going to get going and Mikheyev's not scoring goals, who's he playing with?
Yeah.
And that's something that has to get better. And I'm hopeful that Höglander does find his game. But through the first two games so far, he's a gritty player. He gets in on the forecheck. He's shifty. He's dynamic, explosive at times. He's not super fast.
Yeah.
The pace has picked up. Are you noticing him getting on the forecheck? Are you noticing his pace? Can he find ways to be more effective? Because right now, they really need him to get going, too. As much as we talk about Pettersson, right now, they have one line going with JT kind of at times, and then the Lindholm line. And I'm not quite sure where Höglander is at right now.
Höglander, hard to say he's underrated with the way he's played in the playoffs so far. So I'm gonna give you this one.
next one from C. Power play one being stacked right now. Overrated or underrated?
So I think the power play had some good moments.
Yep.
The first power play was dreadful.
Yes.
The second one, they had three grade A chances. Mm-hmm. Pettersson should have scored on the power play at the end of the first period.
Yep. They had their moments. I think after that, and there wasn't as many opportunities afterwards, but, you know, and Rick Tocchet alluded to this as much last night, the missed chance at the end of the first period maybe affected them moving forward.
Yeah.
Pettersson's got to get going. Like, for the power play, as much as anything else, like, I think Miller had... a bit of a tougher night with his puck handling. You know, there was some missed opportunities. You know, he had a couple of one-timers where either his stick blew up or he just completely whiffed on it. You know, there was... He wasn't as clean as he was in game one, I don't think JT Miller was. So, you know, it's a little bit of blame to go around. Besser, that shot he gets off from the bumper, is it the shot you would expect out of a 40-goal scorer? I think he could have done better with it. All of these little things, it comes down to execution, but the power play, it's hard to have Garland there as part of that top unit if Pettersson isn't a threat either. And
at least he was shooting the puck. Didn't get any on. He had 9 shot attempts.
Yeah.
So at least he was shooting the puck, but it needs to be more of that from Pettersson.
And even passed up a few shots he should have taken.
Probably, yeah, well, the one to Garland.
That one to Garland was just like, oh, man, have you ever been in a room where 20,000 people collectively groan?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I have.
Yes, yes, yes. I've been there before. Oh, this idiot?
The power play, look, it's definitely not underrated right now. They had their moments, though, last night, right? Like, a couple of weeks ago, we would have said, like, this power play is just dreadful. They can't even get an entry, right?
It's better.
Last night, they picked Nashville apart a little bit. They just couldn't finish.
Yeah, you mentioned it, though. It's kind of like Pettersson.
Yeah.
It's like Pettersson's close, but it's not quite there.
Yeah.
Power play's close, but it's not quite there. If one happens, the other one should happen.
Yes.
Right?
All right, next.
Next one from Vicky. Playoff superstitions, overrated or underrated?
Underrated, man. Whatever happened in game one, do more of that.
Sad is a very superstitious guy, so no, I'm sure he's
the opposite of that.
To me, it's all overrated.
Yeah?
Yeah, to me, it's all overrated.
If you wore your favorite blue shirt on during game one and you didn't wear it for game two, well, guess what you're doing for game three? You're going back to wearing your favorite blue shirt.
I understand it from, like, if you need something to make yourself feel better,
yeah,
do what you got to do. You know, I guess as you're coping through something, right? Like, I think that's fine. I just think it's overrated. Like, there's nothing you can say or do, right? Or, like, a routine you have to repeat. I think it's good to have routines.
Yeah.
I think that's good for discipline. It's good to have familiarity and stuff like that. Do I call that superstitious? No. I think it's more about routine than anything else.
I just personally live my life mostly like Pedro Serrano in Major League. So anything to get the good vibes going. If I got to do some voodoo, get the real superstitions going, you know, burn some incense to get the vibes really going and try to find a way to make it work.
And get a voodoo doll or something too.
Really getting after it. We'll end with this one from Dom. First dates, overrated or underrated?
Oh, my goodness. So overrated.
It's been so long.
Yeah, it's been a long time for me now, too. But my general theory, especially now that, you know, you're with somebody and you're like, you know, whatever, you're not thinking about dating, the thought of, like, if it ever crossed, you have friends, right? They're like, hey, you know, you're dating and stuff like that. And when I hear the stories, like, the thought of, like, trying to meet somebody and then, like, getting to know them, the awkward phase a little bit, too. And nothing's more annoying than going on a date that's, like, not going where you want it to go.
No.
And it's like, oh, now you're kind of stuck here and you got to find an awkward way to end it and move forward or whatever it is. So to me, first dates can be fantastic if you have a good one, right? But that whole dating,
it's high variance.
It is. Like, it's, you know, like
it's like Nikita Zadorov. So high variance.
Do you think if you had 84 first dates, do you think 18 would 18 be good dates, or do you think it would be more? Because that's how many shots the Canucks had attempted, and only 18 got on goal. Do you think the ratio is the same on first dates and good first dates?
Yeah, probably. Probably is. Like my wife and I, like when we go out for dinner, like a lot of times we'll like look around the restaurant and be like, "You think they're on a first date?"
Looks a little awkward, you know. But you can have a good first date, right? I just mean overall, I think if you go volume on them, I don't think a lot of them are great.
I think maybe the younger gents probably have a better take on this than we do.
Yeah, Ben, do you have a take on this?
First dates?
I think strapping young man.
If you don't have 18 first good dates out of 84, you're the problem.
Probably. That's a good take.
Ben, you are the problem.
I've had like two first dates.
Yeah.
One of them was very successful.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's great.
You know, I've gotten onto a new thing. This is very out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
I've identified a new healthy snack.
Oh, you have?
It's high in protein, low in calories. And it's very Mediterranean of me.
I'm so intrigued right now.
Lupini beans.
Lupini beans?
Have you ever had lupini beans?
No.
Oh, they're delicious. And they're incredible.
Oh, yeah, I've had lupini beans. They're tasty. Yeah.
And they are the perfect high-protein, low-calorie snack. Very underrated.
Yeah,
nobody talks about a high-protein, low-calorie snack and ever mentions lupini beans. The only reason I know this, I was at the store, and I was like, man, I used to eat these when I was a kid, and then I looked at the macros. I'm like, man, this is incredible.
Yeah.
How have I not enjoyed these before?
Yeah, there's some dishes I've had with lupini beans. They're good.
I just snack on them like chips.
My friend and I thought about starting a business centered around lupini beans. And calling it Binko Beans.
Binko.
That was my fallback option if radio didn't work out. It would have been like a snack flavored lupini beans.
Oh, that would be great.
I'm telling you, man.
That is really good. A couple texts on the dating stuff.
Yeah.
Silver and Black Canuck. Can confirm dating in 2024 is ass. So that's his take on it. This one here says first dates are like Silov's low floor, high ceiling.
Yeah. I just...
And Tyler says, does that mean 84 attempts you only score once?
It's a low percentage play.
That's not what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on what you're going out on first dates for. If you want to meet somebody, it's about meeting somebody and getting to know them and hopefully having a lot of fun. And the thought of a first date right now is...
Yes.
Yes. Like,
I don't think you can ever go into a first date being like, I'm going to marry this woman.
Mm. No, definitely not. No.
You have definitely to go not. In being like, I'm going to get to know you, see if we like each other, and just go from there.
Yes.
Just vibes.
Like I said, it depends on what you're going for.
This is the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with.
That's what I did.
That's a pretty lofty bar.
This is why Josh is irrationally confident, right? He's like, I can throw a touchdown pass in the NFL.
Man,
If
you go into a first date like that, you're just as likely to be asking that person, so how many kids you want?
Yeah.
Like, who does that on a first date?
Could you imagine? Yeah.
All right. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You're listening to Canuck Central.